This is Kindergarten Cop, and it is Friday, May 8th, 2026. And today I will be reading from the Pantograph. To start out with, I will read an article titled Downs Invests in Streetscape. $2.1 million spent so far on parking, pedestrian safety by Drew Zimmerman. This is from Downs. Roughly $2.1 million has been invested into a streetscape plan to provide more parking and pedestrian safety to downtown Downs, but the final price tag may be double that amount. Village President Mike James said only 65% of planned projects have been completed, and another $2.1 million may be necessary to complete all of the street and sidewalk projects the village has planned. That money can come from federal, state, and/or local sources, depending on grants. The project was first conceived in 2018 as part of the management and planning programs involving non-metropolitan groups, or MAPPING program, which is facilitated by the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs. The program is a strategic visioning and planning process where residents in rural communities are invited to create an action plan for their town. The plan identifies goals, strategies, and projects that will move the community forward and proposes an implementation plan. We had a lot of different contributors to this, and we came up with a four-step plan that focuses on priorities of four goals, James said, and those four goals are centered around small business growth, parks and community events, and housing growth. Although the village had already taken steps to revitalize downtown businesses through tax increment financing, James said a streetscape plan was seen as the next phase of downtown development. TIF districts fund redevelopment by diverting property tax revenue increases that are generated by improvements in the defined area. We need better parking, James said. We needed better mobile movement with and safer movement with pedestrian traffic. James credited U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, Republican of Dunlap, for securing the federal funding that made the first phase of the work possible. LaHood's office could not be reached for comment. When the village submitted its application for funding, it had already spent about $300,000 on engineering and design work, and the project was shovel-ready. One of the primary goals was to slow traffic as much as possible on Seminary Street, which cuts through downtown Downs, by adding curb bump-outs to narrow lanes. While that was done, the street's role as County Highway 27 connecting US 150 and Interstate 74 complicates further work, such as reducing the speed limit. People want stop signs and stoplights, and that's one thing that's not used to slow traffic down, James said. Additional parking on West Franklin Street was also included as part of the $2.1 million investment. In total, 15 to 20 new spaces were added to the downtown area. Absolutely everything in the downtown is pedestrian-friendly, widened, and Americans with Disabilities Act compliant, James said. James said the flow of traffic on Seminary is still an issue and is not one the village can help to resolve, since the county owns the north side of the roadway up to U.S. Highway 150 and the state owns its heading south to the Interstate 74 interchange. The county was very much in collaboration with us on this project, and they helped us with what they would allow and what they wouldn't allow, James said. We attempted at one time to do a jurisdictional transfer of the road so that we would have more control, but that didn't work out. McLean County did restore its portion of Seminary and the sidewalks ahead of Streetscape Project, which also improved drainage in the area. The second phase of the project will create street parking on Main and East Franklin Streets. Road work would be done on West Water Street and a parking lot south of West Main Street. The village would use motor fuel tax dollars to connect the lot to Seminary via an alleyway. A new sidewalk on the south side of West Main Street has already been completed, thanks to grant funding secured by State Senator Sally Turner, Republican of Beeson. However, the village will have to submit another federal grant application to finish this work. James anticipates the second phase would cost another $2.1 million in total. Next, we turn to an article on school funding. School funding formula working, lawmakers assessing evidence-based funding by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois. This is from Springfield. As budget negotiations kicked into high gear at the Illinois State House this week, lawmakers from both chambers have begun to assess how much progress has been made under the evidence-based funding formula for public schools. That was the formula lawmakers passed in 2017 that was supposed to bring about greater equity in school funding by increasing the state's share of overall school funding and directing the new money to the most underfunded districts in the state. The budget lawmakers pass this year will be the 10th written under that formula. But as the anniversary approaches, state records show that despite an additional $3 billion in state funding for public schools during that time, most of the state's 851 districts remain underfunded, including dozens that receive less than 70% of what the formula says they need to operate effectively. That underfunding is not theoretical. It has real consequences across the state, Crystal Mallory, a lobbyist for the Illinois Federation of Teachers, told a Senate committee Tuesday. We are beginning to see staffing shortages and increased attrition, program cuts and loss of student supports, districts developing deficit reduction plans due to uncertainty. How EBF works. Under the original bill, the state is supposed to add $300 million each year in new funding for pre-K through 12 schools, plus an additional $50 million for property tax relief grants that are awarded to certain high-tax districts. The law also uses a formula to calculate an adequacy target for each district based on its size and demographic factors, such as the number of students from low-income households or students who are English language learners. The law then uses a formula to calculate each district's current adequacy percentage, taking into account how much they can raise from local taxes, how much they receive in federal funding, and how much they currently receive from the state. Under the law, every district is guaranteed to receive at least the same amount of state funding as they received the previous year, but priority for new funding is given to districts that are furthest below their adequacy target. Since its enactment, the cumulative increases have totaled more than $4 billion in annual funding for public schools. That includes just over $3 billion through the EBF formula. Lawmakers have also increased funding for items outside the formula, such as career and technical education, as well as transportation and other mandated categorical expenses. That has brought total general revenue fund spending for pre-K-12 public schools to $11.2 billion this fiscal year. Still, according to Illinois State Board of Education officials, bringing all districts up to at least 90% of their adequacy target, which was the original goal of the EBF formula, would cost yet another $3 billion. Fully funding the mandated categorical expenses would cost another $600 million beyond that. Funding inequities. According to ISBE data, of the 851 elementary, high school, and unit school districts in the state, 532, or 63%, currently receive less than 90% of their adequacy target under the formula, including 48 districts, or 5.6%, that receive less than 70%. There are 223 districts funded at 100% or more of their adequacy target, including 14 that are funded at greater than 200%. The Ohio Community School District 505 in Bureau County has the highest funding ratio at 354%. Carbondale Community High School District 165 at 61% of adequacy is the least funded district. Stacy Schulte, a middle school teacher in the Grant Community Consolidated School District 110 outside East St. Louis, testified about the conditions in her school. ISBE records show that district in Fairview Heights is currently funded at 75% of adequacy. Our students don't have health programs, music classes, the opportunity to learn languages, or anywhere close to a technology curriculum, she said. Just now, we're trying to buy textbooks that haven't been replaced in a decade. Keeping things current and up to date is pretty important in the world these kids live in, and we haven't had the funding to do it. Our students have been sitting with outdated material as the world moves on. Cost of full funding. Mallory and Schulte both testified in favor of Senate Bill 3701, sponsored by Senator Graciela Guzman, Democrat of Chicago. It would require the state to fully fund the formula. That would mean providing enough state money to bring all districts up to at least 100% of their adequacy target, starting in the upcoming fiscal year. The bill also calls on the state to fully fund the additional cost districts incur, known as mandated categorical expenses, which are not covered by the EBF formula. SB 3701 would not actually provide that additional funding. That would still have to be approved separately each year as part of the regular budgeting process. If the state says that a service is required, the state should fund it, Guzman said of her bill. And then if the state has defined what adequate education looks like, the state should also fund that. So, if we're serious about equity, property tax relief, and supporting public schools across Illinois, then we have to stop treating underfunding as if it is normal. Republican Senator Terry Bryant of Murfreesboro, who voted for the original EBF bill in 2017, said she supported the concept of the bill, but questioned whether the state could afford to pay for it without raising taxes. I don't have a problem with doing it. I want to do it, she said. I'm not supportive of new taxes. I am supportive of priorities. So, provided this becomes priority-driven, I'm all for it. Results of increased funding. During a House budget hearing in April, ISBE Chairman Steve Esoya said the increased funding the state has put into the formula so far is paying dividends. After 9 years of investment, the number of districts at or above 90% adequacy has grown from 194 to 313, and outcomes show real progress, he said. Graduation rates are at a 15-year high. Achievement gaps are narrowing. Student growth exceeds pre-pandemic levels, and Illinois 8th graders now outperform national averages in reading and math. But during a separate hearing Tuesday on the EBF formula in the House's K-12 Education Budget Committee, Representative Blaine Wilhauer, Republican of Beecher City, expressed skepticism that Illinois students are performing any better today than they did before the formula was adopted, despite the increased spending. You've set real benchmarks in the formula as far as what you expect on spending, he said. We need real benchmarks on what we expect on student outcomes in conjunction with that spending, because it looks to me like there's really nothing. Cynthia Lund, ISBE's Chief Governmental Relations Officer, explained that the funding formula is not tied to student performance outcomes. But, she said, the state tests results each year and reports the results of those tests on the annual state report card, adding that those reports have indicated strong growth in student performance in recent years. Well, I think that a lot of people would disagree, Wilhauer said. Turning to the arts, this article is titled Prairie Fire Theater to Host Garden Party Themed Gala Fundraiser on Saturday by Olivia Jacobs in Bloomington. Prairie Fire Theater is bringing a garden party to Illinois Wesleyan for its annual gala and fundraiser this weekend. The gala event is open to the public and will be held at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, May 9th at Illinois Wesleyan University's Hanson Student Center, showcasing a night of performances, a buffet, hors d'oeuvres, drinks, auction items, and raffle prizes. Saturday is really a party. It's a good time for our donors, and I enjoy helping out for the gala. We've got some fundraisers, we've got some auction items that I participate in putting together, and it's just a really good time, said Ken Solem, president of Prairie Fire Theater, in an interview with the Pantograph. It's really good quality food, drink, and entertainment. Tickets are $85 in advance or $95 at the door. Guests can also sponsor a table of eight for $640, saving $5 per ticket. To purchase tickets, visit prairiefiretheater.org. The organization's mission is to bring first-rate performances in musical theater and light opera to all ages and backgrounds in Illinois, often offering free or reduced cost shows to reach more people in the community, according to a news release. Bob Mangialardi, local artist and director of the Opera Theater Program at Illinois Wesleyan University, founded Prairie Fire Theater in 1998. The group produces 3 to 4 musicals each year and an annual children's opera written by Nancy Brokaw. The children's opera typically includes 40 shows performed in front of more than 9,000 children annually. The show is running and is scheduled to tour 52 schools this year. Saturday's performances will feature Nate Douglas, Pat Gake, Aaron Hayes, Andy Kreis, Petra Lyon, Mandy Mangialardi, Bob Mangialardi, Sarah Mayo, Mina McIntyre, Kenny Prince, Rusty Russell, Adam Schofield, and Catherine Starr, as well as a special appearance by Prairie Fire Theater's 2026 Children's Opera. There's always some opera. There are some Broadway show tunes, there are some other pieces, but the performers pretty much pick their own pieces that they like to do. It's all live. We typically run 8 to 12 performances, and it runs for about 3 hours, Solem said. Performers will be accompanied by pianists Charles Berggren, Sarah Dale, and Lou Witzig. We always have really good quality singers and performers. A lot of them come from Wesleyan because Bob Mangialardi is a professor at Wesleyan, so a lot of his students will be involved, especially the children's opera, he said. There's a lot of really good talent in Bloomington, and we're able to draw on that. He said sometimes they have had past gala performances travel from Chicago or farther to attend because they believe in supporting the organization. Solem said he believes people really enjoy that Prairie Fire Theater only performs musicals too. Prairie Fire's other upcoming events include A Little Night Music, July 10 and 11, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, August 7 through 9 and 14 to 16, and Cabaret 1900, October 15 through 18. And this article also includes a photograph of Ken Solem, president of Prairie Fire Theater, as well as an article of 3 individuals who are past gala attendees posing for a photo. Teens arrested on firearm charges from Bloomington by Matuz Janik. 2 16-year-old boys were arrested Tuesday in Bloomington after police said one of them had a loaded AR-15 style firearm with a sawed-off barrel. The juveniles, both of Bloomington, were arrested about 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, May 5th, while the Bloomington Police Department's Street Crimes Unit was investigating in the 600 block of West Monroe Street, according to a news release. Officers saw a group of juveniles walking in the roadway and stopped them near the 1000 block of West Market Street for the violation, police said. One of the juveniles refused to comply with officers' commands and ran from officers, police said. After a brief foot pursuit, officers detained him and found he had the loaded firearm, police said. The second juvenile was arrested because he had possessed the firearm earlier in the day, police said. Both boys were taken to the McLean County Juvenile Detention Center on initial charges involving weapons possession. Their names were not released because of their ages. All suspects are presumed innocent unless proven guilty in court. Police said the investigation remains ongoing. Possessing guns illegally is a community concern that can easily turn into a crisis, said Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington in the release. The purposeful and brave work of our police officers, which occurs daily, helps hold wrongdoers accountable, Symington added in the release that public tips help police address potentially violent crimes. To submit an anonymous tip, send a text message to 847-411 with the phrase BPD tips, BPD TIPS, followed by a space and the tip information, or contact the Crime and Intelligence Analysis Unit at 309-434-2963 or CIAU at cityblm.org. Illinois Wesleyan University graduates 338 Titans by Olivia Jacobs. Illinois Wesleyan University commencement on Sunday, May 3rd, in the Shirk Center saw 338 Titans graduate in various fields of study in front of families, faculty, and staff. For the first time ever, the words of the late IWU president Minor Myers Jr. were performed in a musical rendition by the university's collegiate choir. Go into the world and do well, but more importantly, do good. Ceremony speakers included President Shion Zenger, Board of Trustees Chair Tim Zerlong, Class of 1974, Chloe Schapowski, Senior Class Speaker, Tyler Schwend, Faculty Representative, and Keynote Speaker Colleen Canaday, retired President of Carl Broman Medical Center and Carl Eureka Hospital. Canaday spoke about the power of resilience and positive self-talk. What you say to yourself, make sure it's forward-moving. It's action-oriented, and it's providing you with direction, she said in remarks released by IWU. I challenge you, believe in yourself, practice resilience, practice positive self-talk, she said. Continue to feed yourself all of the goodness, because you are well prepared to go out into the world, to do well, to do good, and to make amazing contributions. In her speech, Schapowski said, IWU taught us that it's okay to try before you're ready, to speak up even when your voice shakes, to lead imperfectly, to care deeply even when it would be easier not to. As we leave this place, my hope is that we carry the people and ideas that Illinois Wesleyan gave us, not just in our resumes, but in how we show up, that we stay curious, that we choose kindness, that we build community wherever we land, she said in remarks released by IWU. And this article includes a photograph of keynote speaker Colleen Canaday speaking from behind the podium at the graduation ceremony. It also includes a photo of senior class speaker Chloe Schapowski addressing the class of 2026. A photo of graduates watching and reacting as classmates cross the stage at Illinois Wesleyan University's commencement on Sunday, May 3rd, 2026 at Shirk Center on the Bloomington campus. A photo of IWU President Shion Zinger shaking the hand of a 2026 graduate. A photo from a distance showing hundreds of family, faculty, and staff members joining graduates at the ceremony. A photo of graduates standing during the ceremony. And then one final photo of graduates watching President Shion Zinger speak. Now an article regarding Mother's Day, A Job for Mom, Solving Life's Mysteries by Susan Hazlett. We celebrate mothers this weekend because we and everything else in the house would be lost without them. Moms are great at caring for their families, but did you realize mothers are also expert puzzle solvers? Like Nancy Drew with keen detective skills, moms, and dads too, must help their children solve life's daily mysteries. For me, finding lost objects has always been my superpower. Missing homework, absent umbrellas, errant earrings, and I can find it. And even though my daughter is now grown with a place of her own, I'm still on call. Did I leave my new work shirt at your house? She asked. I can't find it. I bet you washed it and forgot. Try looking in your dryer. It's music to parents' ears when we hear the words, "You were right." However, many years ago, I was stumped by the case of the missing raincoat. The object in question was a new navy blue slicker, purchased for our daughter in third grade. My husband printed her name in neat letters on the inside label. "Do not lose this coat," I said one stormy Monday morning as she left for school. "Where is the coat?" I asked Monday evening. Every parent reading this column can guess my child's response. "I don't know." But here's what I didn't understand. It was still raining, cats and dogs. How do you leave your raincoat behind when you're sure to get soaked? Nonetheless, I had to focus on the task at hand, find the new jacket. Super sleuth moms know where to look. First, I tried the great black hole, which consumes all items within its gravitational pull, the back seat of the car. In the mysterious Buick abyss, I found one gold soccer shoe, 7 pencils, all with broken tips, earphones, a social studies worksheet, yesterday's mystery solved, and 2 empty water bottles, but no coat. My next stop was the lost and found at school. All parents know the administrative assistants at school are the key to sanity and survival. The assistants know everything from what time the school spring play begins to whose PE uniform is in need of laundering. They also know the current contents of the school's lost and found bin. Talking with a school administrative assistant is like having access to the CIA and IRS. "No navy raincoat," she said, combing through the pile. "There's a pair of underwear, though, and a pair of pants. Also some nice jewelry, including a couple watches." The collection also included lunch boxes, sunglasses, a shoe without a mate, and a cell phone. Let's hope the child with missing underpants and pants didn't also lose his cell phone. How would he call his parents while hiding in the locker room? For years, my childhood friend Muriel Ann Glitzengelder was the keeper of a boy's sweatshirt that did not belong to her 2 sons. A friend had left it at their house, and although she reminded the boy to take it every time he visited, he always forgot. Time passed, and all the boys grew. The sweatshirt, now too small to fit, still hung in Muriel Ann's hall closet. "Finally, I gave it to Goodwill," she said. It was like saying goodbye to an old friend. All those years ago, the case of the missing raincoat was eventually solved with the help of another mother who spotted the slicker in the gymnasium of a different school. Don't ask me how it got there. Moms also know when to let go and move on. Mother's Day, dear reader, is a perfect time to say thank you to those wonderful people who love and care for us. We'd be lost without them.